am so pleased now to welcome the United States Poet Laureate Billy Collins to our program, Poets on Air. He's also a distinguished professor of English at Lehman College. It's quite a blessing for us to have you join us today.
Thank you.
It's very important for me to hear your reflections on the place of poetry in response to disaster.
Well, I sort of said from the beginning that because this question arose pretty quickly after September 11th of last year, that it's one thing to address a disaster as a subject matter. It's another thing to think of poetry as a kind of counterweight to terrorism or to wholesale murder.
Yes.
So that I had a more general, I was preferring the general sense of poetry, that poetry stands opposed to wholesale death, among other things, and that that there wasn't a need, at least that I saw personally, to respond directly to these events. I think that changed when, I was asked about a month ago by some people at Congress if I would contribute something to this joint session of Congress that was held in New York on September 6th, and it was the first at Federal Hall. It was the first time that Congress had met in New York, I think, since 1790-something. I think it was 212 years, maybe. And this was the building in which George Washington was inaugurated. It was the building in which the Bill of Rights was formed and signed. So it was a tremendously historic occasion. And I, I guess since September 11th, just to go back a little bit, I've really found about 8 different ways to duck this issue.
Yeah.
When people would ask if I'd written a September 11th poem. And these evasions have ranged from just saying, I would prefer not to, to more elaborate kinds of aesthetic excuses for not doing it. It just seemed to me that the scale was all wrong for me. My poems generally, and I think you know some of them, tend to be rather small scale affairs that focus on a little bit of individual experience. My typical poem would be me kind of looking out at a bird bath at death.
That's the
Billy Collins poem, and to kind of escalate that into a poem which responded to national disaster and unprecedented historic moment in American history just seemed to be too big for me. I sound like the professor that you
have
one question.
No, not at all.
It goes for an hour, but
no.
When Congress asked if I'd do something, I said, well, I don't have a poem of my own to read, but I will come up with something. In other words,
yes.
I'll read some Whitman, or I'll find some American poetry that seems appropriate to the occasion. And I asked them to get back to me in a week, and in that intervening week, it occurred to me, well, that might be possible to do this, to write a poem in response to those events, and so I did it.
You know, when you were saying earlier that that your poems are more particular, it seems to me that that's one of the great powers of poetry, that it forces us back to the particular. I mean, this terrible disaster happened because people were hooked into general ideas of, what is God and who is right and who is wrong. So that poetry is an antidote. It brings us back to the body. It brings us back to feeling as it occurs in an individual at a particular moment with a bird bath.
It's also,
I mean, really.
It's also a great, poetry is also a great home for uncertainty.
Yes.
And ambiguity and those conditions where the mind is not fixed and made up. And certainly that is an antidote to, for the terrorist mind leaves no room for uncertainty. You know, it's driven by ideology.
Yes.
And terrorism and ideology are, by their very nature, anti-poetic.
So that, I think you at some point said that poetry itself is the antidote.
Yeah, I think
in itself, whatever it's about.
Whatever it's about, that you put it on the other end of the scale. I mean, poetry exists because there's so much non-poetry in the world, you know, I mean, which is, includes business and politics.
And commerce.
Warfare and commerce and advertising and psychotherapy. And I mean, the way the media is now just saturating us with September 11th, I mean, attempts to kind of contain it. Or to memorialize it, and they all seem to me to be failed attempts. I mean, as someone pointed out, all television is about the same thing. It's about television.
I was very hesitant when the idea came to do a radio program because of just being part of the media and perhaps adding to the numbness or the sense that somehow being sentimental and patriotic will do it for us. So I was very...
I think radio has such a much more benign effect.
Yeah, and we can say the kinds of things that we're saying now.
That's right, and a less kind of mesmerizing effect because you don't have to stare at something.
That's right. Well, you don't have to have your brainwaves change the way that the tube does.
You don't have to look at the radio.
That's right, exactly. You have six volumes of poetry, including Sailing Alone Around the Room, which is such an extraordinary title. Nine Horses will be coming out with Random House, is that right?
That's correct, yeah, that's a new book of poems.
You are really an extraordinary poet.
Well,
and as I was telling you earlier, I'm not a fan type of person. I'm a poet, so I think poets don't tend to be fans, but you come closest to the person I would be a fan of, and I am. There was one more thing that I was hoping we'd talk about, which is this poem that you read at the U.S. Joint Session of the Congress, and it's called The Names. And I want to honor what you said, that, well, tell us about why you will not be reading this poem and I will on air.
Right. Well, I just, the poem came about, I mean, as I said, I didn't feel that this subject was right for me. In fact, I mean, most of my poems are really trying to get away from subject matter. I think transcend is probably a little too grandiose a word, but just to kind of evade.
Yes.
And he's being about something in a frontal kind of way. But when I and poetry, for me, there's only one kind of poetry that really deals successfully with history, and that's the epic.
Yes.
And poetry, most of us read, most of us write, tend to be lyric poems.
Mm-hmm.
And lyric poems aren't about history. Lyric poems are about time.
Mm-hmm.
And that was another reason for what I found was a kind of difficult fit. But the road that led me to the ability to write this poem was, first of all, I thought it would have to be an elegy. So I'm thinking, you know, I'm an English major, so I'm thinking in genres.
Yes.
But it had to be an elegy, and that would scale it down. And then I came upon the idea of using alphabetical order and using the names of the victims, and going from weaving names in and out of the poem, going from A to Z, and having each name stand for, kind of represent all the people with that initial letter who died. And I kind of made up names as I wrote the poem, and then I went on, but I wanted to be accurate, so I did go on CNN, on the internet, they have the list of all the victims.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, one peculiar thing was that about maybe 10 of the names I made up were victims, you know, they were already victims, I didn't have to change them.
Yes.
And then I wanted to kind of do a mix of rather common names, where there are many people of the same name who perished. For example, Gonzalez and Flores were a couple, and O'Connor.
Yes.
And then I wanted to pick names that, of which there was only one person, like Eberling and Vanacore and a few other names like that, and have that mix in it. And also the other organization of the poem is that it goes kind of chronologically through a day.
Yes.
It starts at night, and then there's this kind of diurnal progress. So those are that's what I'm thinking about when I'm writing. I'm thinking about, you know, these principles of organization and how to...
To give it some shape so that it can contain.
That make it writable.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Make it kind of bring it within under some kind of control.
Mm-hmm. Because it is, I mean, it is a vast experience that we're feeling or getting numb to it.
No, you have to find a little cage for it.
That's right.
But I, so it was the only poem I've ever written, I think, for an occasion.
Mm-hmm. Which is a huge challenge.
Well, and also the reading was, I don't think my palms have sweated so much since I was dating in the seventh grade. to read in front of about 300 Congress people at Federal Hall on national television.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, having written it for that occasion, that that maybe I just wouldn't read it again, at least for a while, that I'd just let it stand. And instead of kind of making the poem part of my repertoire, just to kind of let it be contained in that one reading for now.
And it honors that particular occasion. I mean, that was its own moment. Poetry is about its own moment.
Well, that's that you put it better, right? Even a better way to justify.
Well, I am grateful to be able to read it.
Great. Well, thanks for doing that for me.
Thank you so much for honoring us with your...
You're quite welcome.
With your presence. Thank you.
Before I read you the names, here are the credits for this segment of Poets on Air. Thank you to Scott McHugh, station master of WKNJ, for the original broadcast of this program. Poets Billy Collins, Stephen Dunn, Charlotte Mandel, Dee Nerksi, Charles Beeler, Alicia Ostreicher, Ed Ramond, and Carol Stone, thank you for so generously reading your poems and offering us your insights. Dennis Lloyd-Johnson and Valerie Marianne's, thank you for your enormous efforts at Melville House Books in creating your anthology, Poetry After 9/11, an Anthology of New York Poets. And thank you for making the links to poets including Alicia Ostreicher and Stephen Dunn and Dee Nerksi. Thank you too to Tycho Tall at the In Love United Project in conjunction with Leslie McGrath at the Recovering Hearts Bookstore in Provincetown for your unstinting work in collecting poetry in response to 9/11 and for introducing us to Charles Beeler. Thank you, Delia Quigley and Ralph Drake, for giving me my start in poetry radio at WNTI in Hackettstown. At Kane University, thank you to Frank Esposito, Walter Bowright, Tanya Poteet, and Mark Lender of the Gateway Project for inspiration and encouragement. Cy Devers, our computer genius at Kane, thank you for inspiring me to do this work and also for all the work that you are doing to create this website for this program. My greatest debt of gratitude goes to Glenn Breda at Kane University for our year of midnight post-production editing. Thank you, Jerry and Milt Schaefer, for your encouragement. And most of all, and always, thank you to my husband, Morton D. Rich, my first and always co-host. The music you have been hearing is from The Prayer Cycle by Jonathan Elias. The label is Sony Music Entertainment. I am Susanna Rich, your host for Poets on Air. We end now with the poem that Billy Collins, the United States Poet Laureate, read to the joint session of Congress in Federal Hall in New York City on Friday, September 6th, 2002. I am honored that he entrusted me with reading it for you. It is called The Names.
Yesterday, I lay awake in the palm of the night. A fine rain stole in, unhelped by any breeze. And when I saw the silver glaze on the windows, I started with A, with Ackerman as it happened, then Baxter and Calabro, Davis and Eberling, names falling into place as droplets fell through the dark. Names printed on the ceiling of the night, names slipping around a watery bend. 26 willows on the banks of a stream. In the morning, I walked out barefoot among thousands of flowers, heavy with dew like the eyes of tears, and each had a name. Fiore inscribed on a yellow petal, then Gonzales and Han, Ishikawa and Jenkins. Names written in the air and stitched into the cloth of the day. A name under a photograph taped to a mailbox. Monogram on a torn shirt. I see you spelled out on storefront windows and on the bright unfurled awnings of this city. I say the syllables as I turn a corner, Kelly and Lee, Medina, Nardella, and O'Connor. When I peer into the woods,